That is Lord Vishnu, who is known as the Yajna Purusha. Dharma Mayaha, full of religious principles. Puman, the Supreme Person. Deva Rishihi, of the demigods and great rishis, like Vyasadeva and Narada. Pitri, of the forefathers. Bhutanam, and of all other living entities. Dharmacha, of the religious principles. Cha, also. Parayanam, the shelter. Translation: the basic principle of Brahminical culture is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, the personification of sacrificial and ritualistic ceremonies. Lord Vishnu is the personified reservoir of all religious principles, and he is the shelter of all the demigods, the great Pitas, and the people in general. When the Brahmanas are killed, no one will exist to encourage the Kshatriyas to perform yajnas, and thus the demigods, not being appeased by yajna, will automatically die. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Since Vishnu is the central point of Brahminical culture, Hiranyakashipu's plan was to kill Vishnu. For if Vishnu were killed, naturally the Brahminical culture would also be lost. With Brahminical culture lost, yajna would no longer be performed. For want of yajna, the regular distribution of rainfall would cease. Yajna bhavati parijanyaha. Thus there would be disturbances all over the world, and naturally the demigods would be defeated. From this verse, we get a clear indication of how human society is disturbed when the Vedic Aryan civilization is killed and the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies performed by the Brahmanas are stopped. Kalau Shudra Sambhavaha. Because the population of the modern world consists mostly of Shudras, the Brahminical culture is now lost and is extremely difficult to reestablish in a proper way. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya has recommended the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, which will revive Brahminical culture very easily. Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nashteyeva, 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 Gotir Anya Tha. Because of the increment in demoniac population, people have lost Brahminical culture. Nor is there a Kshatriya government. Instead, the government is a democracy in which any Shudra can be voted into taking up the governmental reins and capture the power to rule. Because all the poisonous effects of Kali Yuga, the Shastra, Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th Canto, 2nd Chapter, Text 13, says, Dashu Prayeshu Rajashu. The government will adopt the policies of dashus, or plunderers. Thus, there will be no instructions from the Brahmanas, and even if there are Brahminical instructions, there will be no Kshatriya rulers who can follow them. Aside from such a yuga, even formerly, in the days when demons were flourishing, Hiranyakashipu planned to destroy the Brahminical culture and the Kshatriya government, and thus create chaos all over the world. Although in Satya Yuga this plan was very difficult to execute, in Kali Yuga, which is full of Shudras and demons, the Brahminical culture is lost and can be revived only by the chanting of the Maha Mantra. Therefore, the Krishna Consciousness Movement, or the Hare Krishna Movement, has been inaugurated to revive Brahminical culture very easily so that people may become happy and peaceful in this life and prepare for elevation in the next. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya quotes this verse from the Brahmananda Purana. Vipra yagyare mulam tu harir ityasuram matam harireva hi sarvasya mulam samyan matonrupa. O king, the demons think that Hari, Lord Vishnu, exists because of the Brahmanas and Yajnas. But factually, Hari is the cause of everything, including the Brahmanas and Yajna. Therefore, through the popularizing of Hari Kirtan, or the Sankirtan movement, the Brahminical culture and Kshatriya government will automatically come back. And people will be extremely happy. So Vishnur Dvijat Kriya Mulo Yagno Dharma Maya Puman Devashipitributanam Dharma Sharcha Parayanam. So Om Gana Timananda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So the Vedic culture is a Brahminical culture. And to understand what a Brahminical culture is, we have to understand what a Brahmin is. There's a great misunderstanding in India, Fiji, and in many places about who or what a Brahmin is. The literal definition of Brahmin is he who knows Brahman. That's actually the literal definition of Brahmin. So, but then there's secondary qualities. Just like in anything, there's primary qualities and secondary qualities. So the primary quality of a Brahmin is he who knows Brahman. The secondary qualities are listed in the Gita. Sama dhammatapaksho chom shanti marjavamevacha ganavijyanam astikyam brahmakarma suvavajam. Someone who is equal poise, self-controlled, austere, clean, religious, tolerant, regularly studying the Vedic literatures and also practicing what he studies in the Vedic literatures. So these are the secondary qualities of a Brahmin. Nowadays, of course, in India and in many other places, people think that someone who has a Brahminical family history is actually a Brahmin. Like we mentioned last night, you know, someone who's called Sharma, Trivedi, or something like that, then they're actually Brahmanas. But it's stated, and I don't want to offend anybody because we don't have any Sharmas here, but it's stated in the Vedic literatures that in Kali Yuga, sometimes, not in every case, that demons will be born in Brahmin families. So sometimes you have people who are not, I'm not saying always, but sometimes you have people who are not only not Brahmanas, but they're not Kshatriyas, they're not Vaishyas, and they're not Shudras, and they're absolute demons being born in Brahminical families, which is really interesting. And, of course, you see in their activities whether they're demons or not, because someone is understood to be a demon or a Brahman or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya according to their qualities and their work. Krishna, of course, says that in the Gita. Chaturvarna mayashrustam guna karma vibhagasha. That someone is ascertained to be in a particular role in society, whether it's varnashram or outside of varnashram, according to their qualities and according to their work. So we don't judge people according to their birth. In fact, it's mentioned by the acharyas that if you do judge someone according to his or her birth, then that is offensive if the person happens to be a Vaishnava or a Brahmin. That's one of the ways of committing offenses against Vaishnavas, to judge people according to their birth or according to their past, even past sinful activities. Like if you say about someone, well, you may be a devotee now, but before you joined the Hare Krishna movement, you were smoking marijuana or whatever you were doing, or you're eating meat or whatever, then that is a great offense against Vaishnavas, to consider the past. You have the example in the pastimes of Lord Ram, of Valmiki Muni, who was perhaps one of the most, in the past, his name is Ratnagara, he was one of the most sinful personalities imaginable. I mean, not only did he smoke marijuana, I don't know if he did that, but of course in India you find all these people smoking marijuana, and you go around to the holy places, and they offer you some Mahaprasad. Isn't it? You go, cigarette. At least the around the temples of Lord Shiva, they have these big rolls of hashish or marijuana or something like that. And they say, oh, Maharaj, please take some Mahaprasad. And I said, not now. This is Kartik. Otherwise, no problem. But this is Kartik. So as far as Valmiki Muni is concerned, he was a dacoit. I mean, he did a lot worse things than smoking marijuana. And eating meat. I mean, he used to kill people, you know, rape ladies, do all sorts of horrendous things. And he was confronted by the Sapta Rishis when they asked him the question, are you willing to accept all the karma for your work? Because his job was killing people and stealing from them. He was confronted with that when he saw that his family was not willing to share his karma. Then he renounced everything and started chanting the Lord's holy names, even accidentally, Namabhas chanting, because he was chanting Mara, Mara, Mara. And then he became so qualified that not only did he become the author of the Ramayana, but he was able to give shelter to Sita Devi, the most chaste lady in the whole creation, or outside of the creation, or anywhere within the three worlds or outside of the three worlds. Can you imagine that? So here you have someone from the lowest possible position. I mean, you can't think of someone worse than that. And then you have someone who's elevated to the highest position by the process of chanting the holy names. In fact, it's described, Hopata swapachato garyan yaji vagri Vartate namatubhyam tapustavas juhuva shashnarayar brahmanuchar nama grananti yete. That if one is chanting Krishna's names, it's so wonderful that it's understood that he's already performed all the preliminary practices, brahminical practices, sacrifices, and he's come to the platform of really being a Brahmin, if he actually exhibits the qualities. This is the key. And also, in order to maintain his brahminical status, he can't just chant Hare Krishna once and say, I become a Brahmin, or chant Hare Krishna during the morning program and then the rest of the day he does so many other things. He has to be very careful. If one actually wants to be a Brahmin, he has to be very careful about his association during the rest of the day. In other words, if you want to be a Brahmin, it's not that you chant Hare Krishna nicely in the morning and then you go to see a Bollywood film in the afternoon. I mean, what's wrong with Bollywood films? Nothing. Well, no, actually, what's wrong, there's nothing wrong with them. I'm not finding fault. Is that the films, well, or anything that's not Krishna conscious has some connection with modes of nature. And that is the mode of passion and ignorance. Yeah, does anyone think that Bollywood films are in the mode of goodness? Anyone here? Anyone, you know, bold enough to challenge this question? No, passion. I mean, what is passion? All right, let's describe what passion is. Love, you know, the romantic things. That's romance. So there's plenty of romance in those films, right? And then ignorance is sense gratification, and the sense gratification, and the or gross sense gratification. So when you're associating with passion and ignorance, it's like having wet paint rub off on you. It rubs off on your consciousness. Karnam guna sangasha. Sadasa Janma Jonishu. So it affects your consciousness. Or if you eat food in the mode of passion. Some people like a lot of hot chilies in their food, right? Anyone here like hot chilies in their food? A lot. Lots and lots. That's in the mode of passion. Even with vegetarian food, you have food in the mode of passion. Even with vegetarian food, you have food in the mode of ignorance. Let's say you take certain cheeses, and the cheeses smell very bad. Anyone seen a cheese that smells or smelled the cheese that's really bad? Like Limburger cheese or these other cheeses? I mean, that's in the mode of ignorance. So even you can be a vegetarian and eat food in the mode of ignorance. Because stale, tasteless, putrid, decomposed, that's in ignorance. And food in the mode of passion is too hot, spicy. You know, just put all the garam masala on it, you know. you know, love that garam masala. So that's in the mode of passion. So, in other words, the point I'm making is in order to maintain one's brahminical stature or status, one has to be careful about what they eat, what they listen to, what they do, who they associate with, what they read. All these things are important. Otherwise, it's not that one becomes a Brahmin and automatically maintains his status as a Brahmin. Because you find many examples of people who fall down from the status of a Brahmin. And they're called Brahma Bandhus, or friends of Brahmin, or relatives of a Brahmin. So we should not become proud. The point I'm making is that, yes, we're chanting Hare Krishna, and according to the Shastras, if one's chanting Hare Krishna, he's come to the Brahminical platform. However, if we don't, or if we are not careful about our activities in our association, we will lose that status of being Brahmanas. Or as this statement goes, Punar Mushika Bhava. You know that? You've heard that story before? Punar Mushika Bhava means again become a mouse. And that was based on Prabhupada's story, where once upon a time, there was a mouse. This is a story for the children. There was a mouse, and the mouse was being harassed by what? The cat. And I'm asking the children. What animal bothers a mouse?
Cat.
A cat. So, naturally, the mouse was frightened. And so the mouse went to the sage, this great sage. In the previous days, the sages could actually give you a blessing to change your body immediately. Just like if you were ugly, you could say, I want an attractive body. The sage would go, okay, look like a Bollywood star. Be very attractive. So this mouse, he went to the sage and he said to the sage, I want to become a cat. And so the sage said, okay, become a cat. Let's see, looking for the, oh yeah, that's Billy, right? Billy. Billy Baba, you know, become a cat. I'm just trying to remember my Hindi, you know, here. So become a cat. So the mouse became a cat. He was very happy. But this is a question for children again. So cats are bothered by what animal?
Dog.
Dogs, right. That's good. So the dog was harassing the cat. And so naturally the cat went to the sage and said, I want to become a dog. And the name for dog is Kuta, right? Kuta Bob. <Yeah. laughs> See, I'm learning some Hindi here. So become a dog. So the cat became a dog. And the dog was just very happy. He was wagging his tail, was letting the sage scratch his belly. You know, like dogs do. They turn over the sage and scratching. So he's friendly with the sage. And then after a while, the dog was being, you wouldn't know this anyway, the children wouldn't know this. The dog was being harassed by this, sometimes the story is a tiger, and actually there's two more aspects of it. A tiger. Lions are nice. So the tiger was harassing the dog, so the sage was approached by the dog, and the dog said, I want to become a tiger. So he said, all right, become a tiger. And then the tiger, they naturally like to eat people. So the tiger looked at the sage and said, Sharira Vijaja. He said the prasadam prayer, you know. My lord, you're, these senses are very hard to control. Of all the senses, the tongue is most right. So please give us this sage, Mahaprasad. Anyway, so the tiger looked at the sage, and the sage said, oh, too bad. Punar Mushika Bhava. Again, become a mouse. So this poor tiger became a mouse again, and he didn't want to eat the sage when he became a mouse, because the mice, their mouths are too small to eat sages. All the mice could eat, I guess it's insects or something like that. I don't know what mice eat. So the point of this whole story is that one can actually lose his spiritual stature by not being careful. Or as Prabhupada said, the devotional service is like a razor's edge. If you're not careful using a razor, a straight razor, then you can cut yourself. So in order to maintain one's spiritual position, or a position as a Brahmin, one really has to be alert all the time. Just like you see a Jamil. Here's a story. A Jamil, he was a very nice Brahmin, but he wasn't alert. He was brought up as a Brahmin, had a very nice wife and family and everything like that. But he started to contemplate a Shudra embracing a Shudrani. You understand? Like some lusty couple. In other words, just like a Bollywood film. Right? What happens in a Bollywood film? You get the Shudras embracing the Shudranis. So he started to contemplate. And then when he started to contemplate, he thought, wow, maybe me too. Isn't it? Because Jayato Vishayak Pum Sam Sangos Station Prajayate. And then as a result, he basically didn't, lost his Brahminical status and became a Shudra, or less than a Shudra at that point. So this is important. So there's one point we can get from this verse and the purport. Another point is, Prabhupada talks about the government in Kali Yuga, which is a really interesting analysis, that Prabhupada said democracy is a government of vaishyas, or businessmen, and communism is a government of shudras. So, but here Prabhupada says that the shudras elect another shudra to be in charge of the government. So, why does Prabhupada say that democracy is a government of vaishyas when you see shudras electing other shudras to become president, prime minister, whatever executive head they become? The reason is that the shudras in the democratic system are controlled by the vaishyas, or the business people. Mm. Just like you have, at least in America, we have these things called lobbyists. You have them here too? Similar thing. What happens is that you have these business interests. Let's say you have a big company, IBM or Apple Computer, or these big mega international companies. They hire people to go to the seat of power in a particular country. In America, it's Washington. What's the capital of Australia?
Canberra. What? Political
capital is Canberra. Canberra. Okay, so they go to Canberra, and what they do is they wine and they dine. You know what that expression means? They wine and they dine the political leaders. They invite them over. They take them in a jet to go to Fiji or wherever. And basically, or they help pay for their, there's this thing in America called political action committees, where they actually contribute to pay for the election of one particular candidate. Because when someone's running for election in a democratic system, it's very expensive, right? I mean, I don't know how much it costs here, but in America it's like hundreds of millions of dollars if you want to be president of the United States, maybe $500 million. You have to pay in advertising fees. They have advertisements here? You have to put up these posters all over the place, you know, vote for Rishikesh. If I'm elected, I will make sure that everybody has a job, and then what's that? You'll be able to retire at 55 instead of 65. So the politicians make all these promises basically based upon pecuniary, which means financial incentives. And they're controlled by the business interests, which is interesting. And you find this, you know, whether it's in the United States or here or whatever. And therefore, your democracy is more or less under the control of the vaishyas, not real vaishyas. Because a real vaishya would be interested in Krishi Goraksha Vanijan, Vaishya Karma Suvavajan, you know that? In protecting cows and doing, let's say, religious commerce. Something. But the vaishyas nowadays, they're interested in the opposite. Just like I was in New Zealand, and the biggest business in New Zealand is what? Does anyone know the biggest export New Zealand has?
Sheep.
What? Sheep, dairy. Dairy. They export something like 40 or 50% of the milk products that are transported internationally in the world. You know, so you go to New Zealand, you see all these beautiful hills and the cows, and you think, oh, how beautiful. But you're just looking at a fancy slaughterhouse. That's all you're looking at. You know, that's the illusion you go to and you see in New Zealand. You think, oh, it's just like Lord of the Rings. You know Lord of the Rings? No. That's where Lord of the Rings was shot, in New Zealand. And so you see these things, but behind it is the most horrendous activity going on, the most cruel activity going on, the killing of literally millions of cows. Every day, I mean, for example, let's take McDonald's, for example. What is it like? 80,000 cows are killed every day to service the McDonald's restaurants. 80,000. That's just for one restaurant chain around the world. And what to speak of all the devastation that's going on in the earth, you know, take that burning the rainforest and whatever. So anyway, so what you find, and let's take New Zealand, for example, so I don't offend any of you Aussies. So this company called Fonterra, you've heard of Fonterra before? Controls the government to a large extent, because it's one of the largest corporations there. And so, you know, you can't get elected unless you I don't want to use that expression, but let's say lick the boots of that particular company you control. So this is what this is the type of government we have now in most of the Western countries. Of course, in China, it's partially communism, and it's sort of a mix now. Now they're getting more and more into not precisely democracy, but into business interests controlling the government. It's getting closer to that right now. So, but in any case, you got the lowest caliber of people who are controlling the government, which is the Shudra government. And here in the West, we have the Vaishya's control, but the Shudras are the leaders. You understand the difference?
Yeah.
Because the Vaishya's, they like to control Shudras. That's how, you know, Vaishya's control Shudras by offering them a carrot or whatever, a stick, you know, the carrot or the stick example. So that's, a Shudra is controlled that way. A Vaishya is controlled also, you know, by money and wealth and things like that. A Kshatriya is not controlled. A Kshatriya likes to control, Ishwara Bhava. And a Brahmin doesn't like to control. A Brahmin is simply interested in at least liberation, at least knowledge and things like that. So, but a Brahmin would never take charge of the government. That's another point. A Brahmana is aloof. Just like right now, aloof and also interested in the government in terms of giving the government guidance, but not directly controlling. Just like now we have our GBC, which is like the government of ISKCON, and we're discussing right now that certain devotees on the GBC are very much inclined towards management and control, which is sort of a Kshatriya thing. And other devotees, they get a headache when there's too much discussion of management and control and, you know, the hierarchy and organizational charts, flow charts and things like that. You know, they understand it, but they're thinking, what am I doing here? I'd rather be chanting Hare Krishna. So, in other words, that's how I feel. When I, you know, I'm thinking, what am I doing here? So I'm presenting a proposal that the GBC have two different divisions, you know, sort of a Brahminical division and a Kshatriya division. Because people are inclined in different ways. But I have to be careful how to present it, because people think if they're considered Kshatriyas, they're considered lesser. You know, you're the Brahmin, you know, you're trying to usurp our authority. So there's a whole sensitivity there that we have to be concerned with when suggesting such a change or an adjustment in the GBC system. But it is a fact. In our GBC, we do find people who are very much inclined towards management. And they love it. You know, they can just love it, breathe it 24 hours a day. And those of us who don't feel like that, it's like going to the dentist to go to a meeting, a management meeting. Or going to the Yamadutas. You know, I said that. I said I prefer to go to a Yamaduta, see, Yamaraja, than this. So, of course, we do this, but ultimately, people should be engaged according to their propensities. And a Kshatriya is not less. Lord Ramchandra acted as a Kshatriya, right? Krishna, when he left Vrindavan, he acted as a Kshatriya, and he was a Vaishya. So in the Vedic system, we don't denigrate or put down people in different varnas. We don't say, oh, he's only a Kshatriya, only a Vaishya. I mean, we could use some good Shudras. A good Shudra is one who actually just listens nicely and obeys what the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Brahmanas say. So there's nothing wrong. A Shudra can go back to Godhead. A Vaishya can go back to Godhead. A Kshatriya can go back to Godhead. Or a Brahman can go back to Godhead. Krishna in the Gita says everyone can become perfect by following their own particular work. And no one should imitate the work of others, even if they can do it better or more perfectly than the others. So, so these are some of the points we don't have forever. Some people have to go to work. Today, Govinda Mohini has to go to work, right? So any questions or comments about these points? Questions, comments, any of the points I made? That being a Brahmin, staying a Brahmin, governmental systems. Monarchy is a Kshatriya system. Now, I'm not saying that we want to have monarchy right now, because we don't have any, because the people who are in the monarchical lines, you know, prince or queen or whatever, I don't think they're actually qualified Kshatriyas. You know, they're more or less Shudras. More or less Shudras, and then they're followed by one of the paparazzis. Whatever the royal family does, isn't it? And you put their picture on the dollar bill. You know, queen, this, or king, that, so. But Prabhupada did suggest at one point that in India, he said about Indira Gandhi, he said her son could become the king. It was interesting. Prabhupada was making that suggestion. And he said, we should meet with Indira Gandhi and suggest, I think it was Rajiv Gandhi at that point, or Sanjay, either one of the two. Yeah, I think it was Sanjay. He said, he can become the king. And so Prabhupada was sort of suggesting a monarchical system there, although I don't know if Indira Gandhi's family was particularly qualified to be, you know, kings or queens or whatever in India. Any questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, earlier you mentioned the example of the Bollywood film.
Yeah.
Mostly what you see in that is the moment of passion and things like gross sense gratification.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it that clear cut? Can sense gratification fall into the mode of passion, or is it always?
Well, when one is engaged in sense gratification, that's ignorance. Planning for the sense gratification is passion. Passion is like a desire for something. That's an interesting question to distinguish between passion and ignorance. Passion is the longing or desire, like, oh, I want you. Something like that. But when someone engages in gross sense gratification, actually engages, it's no longer passion. Although there may be some mixture. As they're engaging, they're actually thinking of enjoying something else. Or let's say someone's sitting down and eating a plate of boga. And they're eating something that's in ignorance. So they're in ignorance, but they're looking at the other preparation and thinking, boy, I can't wait till I get to that other preparation. So there's some passion there. The passion actually is the desire. And the ignorance is the fulfillment of the desire when they're engaged in gross sense gratification. Do you follow?
Yes.
You understand the difference? So you'll find both. I mean, I don't want to mention Bollywood films too much because I always end up doing that in class here. But you'll find both in films, you know, any type of film, except for Krishna conscious film. You'll find passion and ignorance, and maybe some goodness. You may really see somebody who is a very charitable person, a very kind person, or even a devotee in a film. So you may see some goodness there, too. Yeah. Yeah.
What
does it actually mean by that? Imitate others? That means if someone is of a particular nature, let's say a Shudra, what is his nature? What is a Shudra's nature? He laments. That's the definition Prabhupada said of Shudra. He has a particular psychophysical nature. He's interested in sense gratification. He can't keep the determination. He's in the mode of ignorance. Because that's really the quality of a Shudra. That he can't really keep determined. He's not determined to do anything. So he has to be controlled by someone else. That's the nature of a Shudra. So let's say that particular Shudra imitates a Brahmin. And he becomes one of the Panda or Pandits or Bandits. That's a Prabhupada's expression. In some Mandali. you know, some Ramayana. Let's use a Fiji example. And then, so he's there talking about Lord Ram and imitating the symptoms of someone who is a devotee. You know, he says, oh, Sita, Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman. And then after the whole thing's over, they drink their kava or something like that. Or Sita, Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman, pass the kava. Like that. Right? You really have a social dysfunction that really disturbs the whole society when people imitate someone of another varna. And that, because then of course, what yadyada charity traced us, then people will think that's the example. Well, if he's doing it, right, then, phew, why not me? Like, for example, in America, you have this Bill Clinton, you know, who's supposed to be a kshatriya, you know, I don't know what he is. So he had, you know, problems with women. It wasn't problems, but it was things, interesting interactions. And so people look at that and say, he's the leader. You know, I can get away with any, or let's take even Europe, where you have the leaders like the Prime Minister of Italy, I won't mention his name. And he's known, he goes to wild parties every night. Not every night, every other night. So he goes to wild parties and has old girlfriends and things like that. It's known. I mean, he doesn't even hide the fact. It's not that he says, you know, I'm as pure as snow, you know, white snow or something like that. But he's even proud of it, basically. So here you have a leader, someone who's supposed to be a kshatriya, you know, setting the example of dharma. A kshatriya is actually supposed... Dharma to a kshatriya is the most important. Morality, dharma, ethics... most important. For a Brahmin, the most important thing is transcendence. He's also ethical, he's also dharmic. But for Kshatriya, like ethics, like you take Lord Ram, for example, because the principle of being a king, most important is take care of your citizens, he was willing to send Sita Devi away, even though he loves Sita Devi, but for the principle of that's the right thing, doing the right thing, you know, the moral thing, the ethical thing, taking care of the citizens, which are considered like his children. So here you take the Prime Minister of Italy, and, you know, definitely Shudra quality. And so what happens is that he is taking the position of another Varna. And while he's doing that, he's setting the example and creating a social dysfunction, because the normal Italians are going to look at him and say, he's our leader, he's the exemplar, he's the person we're supposed to follow, or at least... if he can do it, you know, why can't I do it? I mean, like the example that Prabhupada gave about Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great, of course, we understand he went to different countries and ransacked and stole and different things. So there's a story. Alexander the Great was sitting on his throne or whatever he was sitting on, and a thief was captured. And so the thief was brought before Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great said, you know, what's your defense? And the thief didn't have a lawyer, so he had to do his own defense. So he said, what's your defense? And the thief said, basically, what's the difference between me and you, to Alexander the Great? And Alexander the Great said, what do you mean? And he said, you're a big thief, I'm a small thief. So why should I be punished if you're not punished? You know, because you're stealing whole countries. And I just stole some pakoras or something, whatever the thief stole. What is it? Hirachor, Kirachor. Isn't it? Hirachor, Kirachor. That means a diamond thief or a cucumber thief. in Hindi. So that, like Prabhupada said, you know, someone's stealing a cucumber or someone's stealing a diamond. It's interesting. Sometimes you find people from India with the name Hiralal, which means diamond. And then when they come to the Western world, they actually take the word for their name, diamond. Mr. Diamond, how are you? You ever see that happen? You never saw that happen? But actually, their name is Hiralal, but they have to have a Western name, Diamond. So Alexander the Great let him off. because that was a good defense. You know, you're a thief, I'm a thief. And you get away with murder. And I'm just doing something small. So when the leaders don't perform their duties properly within the Varnashram understanding, it creates a social dysfunction. That's why Krishna wants people to stay within their varnas. Of course, we understand our varnas according to our psychophysical nature. But if we keep changing, I mean, like, let's say, all right, let's give a practical example. Here I am, you know, sannyasi is a Brahmin varna. So let's say I start doing business. I come here and say that to Krishna Vichai, I have all these stocks, you know, I want to sell you. Or, you know, I open up my coat and I have all these, whatever it is, you know, electronic things. All right, would you like to buy this? Would you like to buy that? And it creates dysfunction, you know. You think, what kind of sannyasi is that? He's just buying and selling things, right? So it confuses people. And they don't know. They don't really know what to follow as far as their own dharma is concerned. So it's very important for the leaders of society to set good examples. If someone's going to be the king, then they have certain duties to follow. You're going now?
Yes, good.
All right, thank you for coming. We'll see you soon.
Yeah,
okay, keep in touch. Keep in touch. Krishna will bless you. Have a nice family.
Thank you.
Perfect husband. Perfect daughter, and another child to come.
Thank you.
All right. So, okay. So, any other questions?
I was interested in that bit. If a Shudra is trying to read and chant and trying to learn more Krishna consciousness, and he's changing his varna.
Not necessarily that the Shudra is changing his varna by hearing and chanting. He can go back to Godhead being a Shudra. Still he may have to be, let's say, controlled by the higher classes. Unless he actually develops the ability to be independently self-controlled, then he's always a Shudra. There's that example in Lord Ram's pastime where there was this Shudra who was performing Vedic ceremonies and he wasn't qualified, and it was creating a whole disturbance in the kingdom, and Lord Ram eventually had to kill him because of that. That's there. The story is there in the Ramayana. So because it creates a dysfunction in society when you have people doing things outside of their varnas. I mean, just, and you see that with the politicians. It's just really a disturbance. Or if you start to worship people of the lower varnas, like you have the heroes of modern society are the movie stars. I mean, they're like the Brahmin. You know, they'll ask them their opinion about spiritual things. I mean, sometimes it works out all right if the musician happens to be George Harrison and he says, chant Hare Krishna. But, you know, 99% of the musicians are not saying to chant Hare Krishna. They're doing this, what is it, punk or funk or some other stupid type of music. And what is the message they're sending to people? You know, rap. There's Hare Krishna rap too is good, but what is the message they're sending to people? So these are the leaders of society. I mean, who do we look up to? Like if some big movie star walked in the room, I mean, you wouldn't even listen to Bhagavatam class anymore. I'd be left here alone. You know, you just follow him down the stairs. I mean, I've seen that when I've been dealing with some Bollywood stars in India. It's just like, as far as everybody's concerned, I don't exist. You know, just like, who's he, you know? But the Bollywood star, you know, every little twist they make, you know. I was with one of them, and he had a mustache, and they asked him about his mustache. You know, what a question to ask. Do you like your mustache? And then he went... You understand? Started twirling it, and here I am. And nobody's asking me, you know, what do you think about the absolute truth? What is the soul? What's the purpose of life? Like that, and all the ladies. It's interesting. Even one of my disciples, I introduced her to him, and she's just like, you know how women get sometimes, like batting their eyes and everything like that. It's like I took her back to Godhead, practically. I said, you know, I'd like to meet you to meet, you know, so-and-so, and she shakes his hand. His hand. And then in the car, on the way back from it, she was in the same car, she said, "Oh, Krishna consciousness is so wonderful." And I was thinking, but that wasn't Krishna consciousness. It was just... So you see, you know, that's the problem when the leaders of society become the shooters, and definitely, you know, artists, musicians, and everything like that. And I'm not trying to insult an artist and a musician, but it definitely shooters because they can't control their senses so much. I mean, how many times do film stars and musicians get married and divorced and married and divorced, right? And there was one famous lady, I think she's dead. Her name was Elizabeth Taylor. Anyone's heard of her? I mean, how many husbands did she have? As many as Henry VIII had wives. Probably more, you know. You know, huh? And, you know, and everybody knows her. I mean, it's amazing. You all know her here. And if I mention some great devotee, like Gaurakishor Das Babaji Maharaj, who's he, you know? Before. Right? So, you know, where are our priorities? And so this is a shudra society. I mean, our modern society is a shudra society because we worship the shudras, those who are most sensuous. It's like when I was in the university, in the dormitory, they would put up the pictures of the most sensuous women on the walls. You ever seen that in a university? No. Here they're chaste. They don't do things like that. And I'm sure in the women's rooms they put pictures of the guy with the biggest muscles, Rambo, or the Terminator, or something like that. Terminator, right? Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know. Huh? It's, you know, this is really a dysfunctional society that we live in, where the heroes of society are the lowest class of person. So any other questions or comments? Quickly, yeah. In the Manasangita, it's called, actually intoxication, because, you know, tea is something modern and coffee is something modern too. But intoxication, those things which have a mind-altering effect. I mean, sometimes those same things can be taken as medicine. I mean, certainly caffeine can be taken as medicine. I've heard people take it to relieve headaches sometimes. But as... like food, or even garlic is actually a good antiseptic and antibiotic and all those things, antiviral. So it can be taken as to cure some disease. But these things affect the consciousness. Like intoxication puts you into an illusion. I mean, it's really a no-brainer, but it's also there in the shastras, like the Manasangita, that something that changes your consciousness, affects your consciousness, and puts you more in mode of passion. You know, I guess caffeine would put you more in the mode of passion, right? Because I remember, I mean, one of my family members would regularly drink coffee in the morning. I never liked it, so I never drank it. But when they stopped drinking it, they would get the jitters, right? They actually have like withdrawal symptoms, right? And I wouldn't want to talk to them when they weren't drinking coffee because they'd be super angry. I said, "Did you drink your coffee yet? Please drink your coffee so I can deal with you." You know, or they wouldn't have any energy to wake up in the morning. So people get addicted to those things. So basically these things are mind-altering substances. They put you in an illusion within an illusion. We're already in an illusion. We already think we're the body. But if you take something else, then you... like, you take enough caffeine, like that. What do they have this thing called? Red Bull now. You've heard of Red Bull? Some of you have heard Red Bull. It's a drink, and it's very popular. And even in Fiji, they have a big advertisement in Samabula that says, "Feel like a bull," or something like that. You know, feel like a bull. So you drink this Red Bull, and you just like feel like on top of the world, you know. So much energy. I don't think we should take caffeine.
Sorry?
I don't think we should take it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes the students, in order to stay up at night studying, do this, don't they? They have to, you know, you stay up all night studying for the medical exam. The next morning you take the Red Bull or the coffee or tea or something like that. And then you take your exam and you do well in the exam, but then you forget everything the next day. You know, the medical exam, they ask you, what part of the body is this? Oh, that's the nose. And 48 hours later, what part of the body is? I don't know. Because you're so exhausted. I mean, you have, like, it depletes the adrenaline, right? They actually deplete it. So you're so exhausted, 48 hours later, you can't even tell what part of the body the nose is, where it belongs. So you go into the... So let's say you're a resident in a hospital where you're doing like 48-hour, 72-hour shifts. Then someone has to have an operation on the kidney. You take the wrong kidney out. It happens sometimes, doesn't it? That's why nowadays when people have operations, you should take a marker and put it on that part of the body that they're supposed to operate on. That's what I would do. I mean, they do that. I mean, I would do that if I was a patient. I'd take a marker and say, this is the leg. You're supposed to operate with a big circle, you know, red, like that. Because many of these people, they're taking, like, artificial stimulants to stay awake for 72 hours, right? Sometimes they have 72 or more hour shifts at the hospital. No wonder there's so many mistakes.
So are devotees allowed to take caffeine or garlic even for medicinal purposes?
Medicinal purposes, yes. I mean, there's certain extenuating circumstances. Certain extenuating circumstances. I mean, if someone can cure a particular disease, you know, they're getting very sick and they have to take it, they can take it. I mean, we had a lady, I'll give you an example. We had one lady that had a MRSA, that means a methicillin-resistant infection in her arm. And the doctor said, we're going to have to chop off your arm because it was just growing up the arm or something like that. And said, you know, you're going to have to come next week and have your arm amputated to save the body. And so I told her, I said, you take some garlic and you eat it like an apple. I mean, it's pretty horrible, actually. And you chew on it. And within 2 days, the infection was gone. So which is better? You know, so that's called an extenuating circumstance when you can adjust the normal rules for other purposes. In other words, there's emergency rules, too. Emergency. Like, I'm not a kshatriya, for example, but if you were attacked and I had a gun, I should defend you. So that's an emergency situation. You know, normally I don't walk around with a gun, you know, shooting people. But, you know, under certain circumstances, I might. So that's ordinary duties, emergency duties. So I think we have to end that, right? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srila Prabhupada's divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.